And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, and a very good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine this Monday, the 30th of January. How are you keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And thank you so much for choosing us once again for your entertainment on a Monday morning. Lots coming up on the show, as you can imagine. Brendan Devaney's back, by the way. We're going to be discussing yesterday's great game. I thought it was a great game anyway. Maybe it's because we haven't watched inter-county game in quite some time, or I haven't at least. We'll be discussing that and everything else that's coming up on his DL debate later today here on Highland Radio. That and so much more besides. You can watch this programme as you can every morning, of course. Go on to our website, highlandradio.com, click Watch Live, or go on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, so you can watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or Facebook Watch on the same devices. Just search out Highland Radio there. And join the conversation, get involved. Right, okay, let's have a look at what's making the newspaper front pages this morning, starting with the Donegal News. Final preparations are being made as thousands prepared to attend the Together for Chrysler concert in the Aura Leisure Centre tonight. The concert, which is a sold-out event, is in aid of the Chrysler tragedy, where 10 people lost their lives in an explosion at the Apple Green service station on the afternoon of Friday, October 7th, 2022. The highly anticipated show will see a star-studded lineup travel to Letterkenny for the concert, which sold out within 12 hours. With doors set to open at 7 p.m, the concert will feature some of the biggest names in Irish music, including Brian McFadden, Keith Duffy, Brian Kennedy, Mickey Joe Hart, Lisa McHugh, The Whistling Donkeys, and many more. So, well done if you got a ticket, and hopefully you have an enjoyable night there. Okay, the Derry News this morning. The annual remembrance service to commemorate those who were killed on Bloody Sunday was held yesterday at the Rossville Street Monument. Following the event, there was an unveiling of a plaque dedicated to the Derry Corps of the Order of Malta. SDLP leader Colm Eastwood MP has announced he will nominate the families of Bloody Sunday victims for the Nobel Peace Prize. Mr. Eastwood, who was among those attending Sunday's 51st anniversary commemoration events, said he could think of no better tribute to the families given their commitment to peace and reconciliation during their long fight for truth and for justice. A really, really significant story broke yesterday as it relates to... Well, I'll read the story here. I don't see it covered extensively elsewhere. It was a Daily Mail exclusive. I don't know if that's why other papers are waiting to get their own angles on it, or if they're just letting it sort of fly not under the radar as such. But anyway, this is covered in the Irish Independent. Former health ministers Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin will face questions this week over historic evidence the state had no legal basis to charge families for the care of their elderly relatives. It emerged over the weekend that to make restitution to all families affected would have cost the state around 13 billion euro. Sinn Féin wants answers to what the two men knew and when, after leaked internal government papers appeared to show a determination to force people to sue for compensation rather than coming forward with redress. So rather than sort of going to the public and say, we admit we've done wrong, this is how we are going to compensate you for what we have done, or what has been done to you, sorry. A mechanism was put in place to frustrate the process, to discourage people from making an appeal. It was marked top secret. The leaked documentation published in the Irish Mail on Sunday includes a battery of memos relating to a legal strategy apparently aimed at minimising the cost to the state while leaving some people impoverished by the care bills illegally charged. The problem goes back to the realisation that there may not have been any legal underpinning for charging patients for state-sponsored care in nursing homes without evidence 20 years ago, and possibly more. The remedy was the creation of the Fair Deal scheme by Mary Harney, but her immediate predecessor as Minister for Health was Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin. A whistleblower provided the newspaper with a dossier indicating the 13 billion figure. In order to avoid such a huge outlay, and this is a strategy that's documented, it's alleged the strategy was deployed to bury the lack of legal basis, or at least assert that legality could be upheld by a court, meaning liability was effectively denied. Now, what happened was then that when people pursued they had the resources to pursue it legally. When it came to the point of disclosure, then the government settled. Hundreds of court actions were nonetheless taken, with the strategy seeing the state resist any admission. Only when families had reached the point where the process of discovery was imminent, when the state would have to release all relative papers in its possession, was settlement pursued. In such cases, the amounts quietly paid reflected between 40 to 60% of the amounts outright. And in these documents, senior figures that were involved in this praised it. They said, you know, happy days, this is working well. It's working really well what we're doing here. We're really limiting the payouts. All the while, regular people, often those with no resources who couldn't pursue this, were suffering. Their entire worth wiped out in some cases. As I say, I think it's an incredibly, incredibly significant story, and we'll see how it plays out over the course of the next couple of weeks. But it just isn't historic, because it's the type of strategy that had to be reviewed from time to time. So many, many, many people were aware of it. 086 60 25,000, if that affects you. Supports and accommodation for refugees seeking shelter in Ireland could be time limited under proposals due to be considered by the government. This is according to the Irish Times. The Cabinet Committee on Ukraine will meet tomorrow, with ministers set to discuss the shortage in national accommodation, including for those fleeing the war in Ukraine. Minister for Children Roderick O'Gorman will seek immediate access to buildings that belong to other government departments to create between 4 and 6 emergency temporary rest facilities in the coming weeks. The Department of Children has also finalised a paper examining what other European countries are offering refugees. It's understood that the paper shows Ireland is an outlier in terms of the type of accommodation offered to refugees, notably hotel accommodation. A senior government source said that in other European countries there are time limits on supports, particularly in terms of accommodation. Such measures will now be considered in terms of Ireland's policy response. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And senior government figures are furious with Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnell and Green Party Junior Minister Pippa Hackett over their failure to spot the political explosiveness of the Quiltshire Gresham House forestry deal. And I believe this is a story there'll be a U-turn on yet. The government can't scratch this deal, but they can change the terms under which money is granted through this scheme. And I think they're going to have to do that. Well, anyway, we'll see if that happens. Under the deal, private investors represented by the fund management firm Gresham House can invest up to €200 million purchasing Irish forestry. This will then be managed by Quiltshire, the state body currently in charge of forestry. Speaking to News Talk, Mr. McConlogue stressed the deal was not our preferred option. He also pledged, in future we plan to work much more closely with Quiltshire. However, a senior political figure warned it was once again too little too late. The genie's out of the bottle. Rural Ireland is suspicious and furious. A land war is next on the agenda. The original deal sparked accusations of a furore across a wide section of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Greenback benchers, backed up by Sinn Féin and Solidarity TDs, that vulture funds are being given control of Ireland's forestry via the back door. So, as I say, the only way to scupper that deal is to really, I suppose, change the terms under which money can be granted to investors. They should do it at this stage. You know, no one wants it, seemingly, except this investment company in Quiltshire. But we'll see if that U-turn does indeed happen. The Irish Daily Star this morning: fears are growing that there will be no more electricity credits until next winter, despite the likelihood of a cold snap in February and March. Yesterday, Eamon Ryan said that the government will decide in the next few weeks whether or not to extend electricity credits into next winter. The Environment Minister told This Week that the COVID-19 supports were wound down over time and the issue would require something similar. He said lowering the credits is less likely, and that if they were to be continued, they would likely be continued as they are. If we were to continue them, I think they'd probably continue as they have been used. He says an announcement will be made on that in the next wee while. We shall see. On to the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, and Sinn Féin is by far the most popular political party in the country, while backing for Fine Gael has dropped in the wake of Pascal Donoghue's election expenses controversy. And also, I wonder, well, I presume the paper, I don't presume, the paper's presuming that's why. The survey also revealed the public are increasingly unhappy with the government's handling of the refugee and migration situation. The Red Sea Business Post poll put Sinn Féin at 33%, up 2%, and Fine Gael at 21%, down 2 percentage points compared to a similar poll taken before Christmas. And in relation to the handling, the government's handling of the refugee and migrant situation, the question is really quite important how it was phrased, because it's not to say that the public believe that we should not be taking in migrants or refugees. It's the manner in which it's being done, where they're being housed and how they're being housed. But anyway, during this period, Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue was embroiled in a controversy over his electoral expenses. Do people, though, who support a particular political party, would they change any political party for that matter? Would they change their views like that over one controversy? I'm not really quite sure they would. But anyway, the Irish Sun: publicans have blasted Diageo for forcing them to hike the price of a pint of Guinness. Hard-pressed punters will pay up to 50 cent more from tomorrow after the brewers increase the cost of kegs. We found just two Dublin city bars that'll charge less than €6. The Halfpenny Bridge Inns, Michael Ryan told us, without tourists, we'd be in huge trouble. So only two bars in Dublin now, according to this paper, will be charging less than €6 for a pint of Guinness. Can you imagine? All right, it's expensive old stuff, isn't it? That's an expensive round. Now, we welcome onto the programme Francis McGrory, Club Secretary at Buncrana Golf Club. Thanks for joining us, Francis. Sorry to be speaking to you under these circumstances. What happened at the club?
Just at the weekend there, probably Friday evening there, the greens were damaged by a couple of boys in a scooter.
How extensive is the damage, Francis?
It's hard to measure, like, you know, because the damage to the green, like, at this time of year, it'll take months for it to recover. So you could be down in competition revenue, green fee revenue, not alone talking about getting the labour to repair it, like.
So they went onto the course in the scooter and did they up and down the fairways and focused on the greens, or...?
They focused on one green in particular. We have them on camera coming in there. There's two young boys on the one scooter. They just head straight for the eighth green, which is a kind of an elevated green up in a height.
Mm-hmm.
So they rallied about in that green, just up and down it and skidding and sliding and tearing up the surface that's been there for 80 or 100 years of grass. Just ruthless vandalism. Why would they do it? I don't know, like.
And it was prolonged, wasn't it? 14 minutes odd they were messing about at that green.
We haven't come in there at the gate. They came in about 5:31 on Friday evening, and they were there for about 12, 13 minutes before they left again.
And I mean, for people who don't play golf or don't understand it, the green is where it's at, really, isn't it, in terms of the finesse of the game. You have one down. You don't have a ton of space there for a temporary green either, I don't think. I mean, it has really serious consequences.
It has consequences. Like, the greens just... the greens are the course. Like, you're judged on the quality of greens you have. And we pride ourselves that we have some of the best greens in Ireland, if not Donegal. Like, it's one of our selling marks that our greens are superior. Like, and for this to happen, like, and in this particular area, like, we'll just have to play around it, like, because we wouldn't have an area for a temporary green, like.
Yeah. Has the greenskeeper had a look at it? How much work is it going to take to get this back into a playable state?
Well, we'll probably get it fixed up temporary, but it'll not be the quality that the members are used to playing on. It'll interfere with your putts and all, like. And it's the time of year, like, there's no growth, like, so setting grass seed at this time of the year is going to be a waste of time, so we'll just have to patch it up temporarily. I was up with the greenkeeper there this morning. He's going to have a look at it now first thing and start doing some repairs to it, like, to get it into some playing state, but it'll just be not the quality that we're used to, and realistically you're probably looking at maybe 2-3 months before it would get anywhere back to standard, like.
Yeah. The CCTV footage at this point, you're saying it's good footage, it'll be released. You want the people responsible to come forward, is that it?
We're giving them a chance there to come forward, like, with a fair idea who the two boys are, like, the two of them's on the one scooter. So with a fair idea, we're just giving themselves and their parents all know who have scooters. They know where they should know where their children are and what they're doing, like, so they have a chance here to come forward and explain themselves, maybe give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they didn't know no better. They might know what golf is, like, you know.
They might have thought it just appeared to be like one of those skateboarding parks. I mean, you know, with the way the, as you say, it's an elevated green up and down. You're saying it's possible you want them to reach out. It's possible maybe they didn't realise that the damage they were doing, not just to this green, it does it to the whole course effectively.
That's right. We're only a 9-hole course, like, so for us to lose a green like out there, it's going to have a severe impact on us, like. And I would like to think that they didn't actually know what they were doing. I would hate to think it was done on purpose, you know. So part of me's hoping that they didn't realise the consequences of their actions. Like, even though, like, they've entered somebody else's property, they should know that right from wrong. They shouldn't be doing that, like. But I would like to think they didn't actually intend to do the damage that they done, like.
Yeah, okay. Electric scooter, is it?
It was an electric scooter, two of them, a small fellow in the front and a taller fellow behind him, just came in the gate, just headed straight to the 8th green, and done whatever they done, up and down, rallying on a electric scooter. These electric scooters are getting out of hand, like, because they came in there, it was dark, they had no lights or nothing, like, so they're actually out in the streets all hours of the evening, like, with these electric scooters. Somebody's going to get knocked down or hit, like, because there are no lights in them. Like, there's times where myself and my wife would go for a walk, like, and you can see these young boys coming shooting across roads and these scooters with no lights in them, like. Yeah. Someday there's going to be a serious accident apart from the vandalism we've encountered, like.
Yeah, I think you and as an individual and as a club are being very fair on this one as well, to be honest with you, and that recognising that maybe they didn't realise the consequences of their actions.
Well, we are just a community golf club. Like, we're not like these large golf clubs who have plenty of money. They do carry out repair work. Like, we just live from week to week. We keep the membership fees at a low rate. They encourage all the local community to play golf. Like, so we pride ourselves in the community aspect. So we would think the worst of somebody until we're aware of what did take place, like, you know.
Right, okay. Well, you're saying, listen, come forward, resolve the situation amicably. The CCTV footage is there. If it was released, I think the people would in the local community would very quickly identify it, and the Gardaí that with them would become involved. You're giving them a window of opportunity to come forward.
Yeah, we're giving them one, though. If we don't hear nothing by the end of the day, like, we'll just report the whole incident to the Garda, like, and right. If we can move on from there, like.
I don't think you can be any fairer than that, Francis. You've a very talented person there looking after the greens, too. Hopefully they're able to work their magic and get it, back to a playable situation sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thanks for highlighting this.
It's
great.
Thank you. No, it's important. Right. Okay, and I think it's been really, really fair. That's an important point to make. British airline Flybe has ceased trading and all scheduled flights have been cancelled. The UK Civil Aviation Authority made the announcement and urged those with booked Flybe flights not to travel to airports. CAA Consumer Director Paul Smith said it's always sad to see an airline enter administration, and we know that Flybe's decision to stop trading will be stressing for all of its employees and customers. Breach has been affected by this. Breach, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right, Breach. What had you planned and what plans were scuppered?
Well, I am going to East Midlands on the 25th of February. It was for an RSM training event. So I had booked last Tuesday. Didn't book to say last Tuesday evening. And then I woke up on Saturday morning and someone was telling me the whole thing was kaboom, gone. And my flights, they weren't cheap, Greg, to be honest. They were €270 for a return flight to Belfast.
Yeah.
So I just was a bit, I suppose, peeved, disappointed, whatever, you know. You can't even plan ahead now at all. It's COVID.
Yeah, and no word on refunds yet. I'd imagine if they've gone kaboom, as you say, they probably don't have the resources to pay. We'll try and find some of that information out, though. You're maybe looking for a payback into your card. That's one option. I don't know how successful that might be and how quickly that might happen.
You know what? I'm kind of annoyed at the fact that obviously they took my money last Tuesday and they knew they were going to go kaboom, as I said, but could they not just reschedule flights? I don't mind how I get, as long as I get, you know, or get my money back.
Yeah.
I do still want to travel, obviously. You know, you don't book something and I won. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping for. I've been on to the bank, but I haven't had any comeback there yet because I paid through my debit card. So hopefully I can get it back. I have to see them today.
Yeah, and as you say, it's a significant amount of money, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's €300 gone just if I don't get refunded.
I don't know if travel insurance, and we'll find out. Owen Carr, maybe Owen can hear me now. Owen, are you there?
I am indeed listening to that story.
Yeah.
It's another very, very sad story from your aviation, Greg.
I was just going to make a point, but you're there and you can answer straight away. It's probably not the case, the point in Breege's case, but if you had travel insurance, does travel insurance cover an airline collapse?
Oddly enough, travel insurance tends not to cover an airline collapse because in the old days, the airlines didn't collapse because they were all government funded. Now, every travel insurance varies from policy to policy. What we've had in about 10 years, for about €90 or €100, you'll get an annual policy. Nobody looks at it. It comes with about 20 minutes of reading with all your clauses. But most of those, in my experience, don't cover an airline collapse. Now, they have... you can buy an extra onto a lot of them that are for about €6 to cover an airline collapse. But that's not really any good because nobody only looks at it, Greg, until the airline has collapsed and they say, you managed to get out of this, guys. There is another way back for Breed, and it's she will get her money back. The two ways back are the credit card charge. Get your charge back, let the credit card company know and get it back quickly. And if that doesn't work, the equivalent of the Aviation Commissioner in England is the CAA, and they will refund everybody. There is a sort of a cover fund, €1 per every flight, that goes into a central pot and it covers collapses like this. The real problem, and Bridges just alluded to it there, is you really don't want the hassle. You don't want to be looking to another airline to pay sometimes a higher price than was the original and going through all that rigmarole. You just want to be told, here's your new flight time. That's not an option, unfortunately. What happened with Flybe is, and they took bookings right up till midnight on Friday, and at 3 a.m. they started sending out emails saying, sorry.
Well, before we get to that story, because I want to let Breege go, how does one apply for a refund through the CAA?
Website, very clear cut, very straightforward. Be very, very careful. When you Google and you say flight refunds, Flybe collapse, you're going to get all of these sites popping up saying, oh, we'll get your money back for you. And they all charge you. It's free. Go straight to the caa.co.uk site and go straight to them. One of the problems with the internet is that Google... if you pay Google money, you'll land top of the page, and there's no shortage of chancers and white.
And we've seen this before when people are applying for visas for America and such. So caa.co.uk.
Breege, for free, we'll charge you. You know, it's shocking stuff. Yeah.
All right, great stuff, Breege. I'll let you go. Busy house, I would say.
Bye.
Thank you so
great,
much.
Thank you.
All right, take
I'll let
care.
You know how I get on.
Please
bye.
Do, Breege.
Bye,
God bless
bye.
You. All right, and good luck with the training, of course. Right. Okay. Sorry about that, Owen. Dipping in and out. So you were about to tell us how this came to pass then, because Flybe were taking bookings right up to the last. How could they have, what is the tipping point? There must be a really real cliff edge with some of these airlines then.
Usually it's a payment that comes in. You know, they have a payment to make. They failed to make it. Flybe didn't own very many of their aircraft. Six of them are leased out of a company in Shannon Airport and one out in Dublin. And they operated a series of Dash 4s. So what they were doing behind the scenes of Friday, this only emerged afterwards, was scrambling for finance. They were running out of cash. They knew they wouldn't be able to continue operating on Saturday. They didn't raise the money that they needed. And the tragedy here is that Flybe failed before. They failed in March 2020. US hedge funds bought the brand for a small amount of money, big to you and me, but a small in aviation.
They bought the name, really, did they?
They bought the name and all the problems for about £2 million sterling. And they then did something very fascinating and reckless, in my opinion, in that they started operating routes which were competing with other airlines. And they put an awful lot of connectivity into linking regional airports into Heathrow. Heathrow is a horribly expensive place to fly in and out of. Your passenger charges before you even start charging the fare are £30 sterling. So they were operating expensive aircraft on expensive routes in competition with other airlines, and it didn't seem to be a model that made a hell of a lot of sense. They then started chopping and changing at short notice. So it was a series of almost crisis management. And you would have thought, if you're coming into a new company, whatever about operating an airline that's run into trouble, if you're buying an airline, you would have worked out a pretty strong strategy to get through it. Now, they also bought in during COVID. They knew the problems of COVID, but nobody expected COVID to disrupt things for so long. And that is another factor that brought them down. But you have to ask yourself, when you go into the aviation game and you haven't got it worked out, it's a very competitive business. And an aviation failure is big news because of the amount of disruption it causes and the havoc it causes for customers. It also causes havoc for Belfast City Airport, who've lost one third of their business in one fell swoop.
Yeah, it's a big hit. So all customers that were due to fly with them, caa.co.uk, that's the place to go and to seek a refund there. I mean, when you have the options, you know, your credit or debit card provider, or whether or not you have this perhaps bells and whistles insurance that might cover you, or the CAA refund, how do you choose which is the best offer there?
Like first stop is credit card.
Okay.
If the credit card gets asked you straight away, the others are a bit longer and a bit messier. The credit card will be looking to the CAA for you to get their money back. But if it's a recent enough purchase, you can generally catch it on your credit card.
Right, okay. This all comes, I mean, it's the flip side of the aviation industry. Ryanair, they've posted its largest after-tax profits for the October to December quarter and said bookings for Easter and summer flights in recent weeks were very, very robust. I mean, they're trying to get in new planes to cover the kind of passenger numbers they'll be shifting around the place. I mean, the strategy they employed, people can be quite critical from Ryanair at times, but they kept their business at a point during the pandemic that gave them amazing springboard when things opened up, and now they're reaping the benefits here.
You got it there, Greg. They kept their pilots licensed. They kept their aircraft certified. They didn't have to store them and then send them back in to go through that expensive process. And they kept their cabin crew employed. Now, that meant when they came back last summer, they roared back into the sky. To give you an example of where they fit in the European Champions League, in 2019, it was pretty much touch and go between the Lufthansa group, not Lufthansa, but the entire group. That includes Swiss, includes Brussels, includes Austrian, which would be the biggest airline in Europe, Ryanair or Lufthansa. You know, there'd be a couple of million between them, but Ryanair were just that nose ahead. It looks, when the figures, Ryanair released their figures for last year, 130 million passengers. When Lufthansa and the third place, Turkish Airlines, released their figures, Ryanair could actually be as big as the two of them combined. They're streaking ahead in passenger numbers because of that strategy. The profit is about one third of the winter of pre-COVID, so they haven't got back to making the money back. And remember, you got to remember, they lost about 2 billion euro. They had 2 billion to lose. Otherwise, they'd be where Flybe is now. Mm. But they lost about 2 billion through the pandemic. So they're edging that profit back. Interesting thing from those figures that you quoted this morning, the revenue per passenger is about 60 euro per passenger, which is a very good modest return, isn't it? Our average fare is about 40 euro of that. So we're seeing a situation where a Ryanair's fares are only about two-thirds of what their revenue per passenger is, because so many people are buying priority boarding and the cup of coffee and the extra bag.
I still don't understand why people do the priority boarding, but anyway, they're clever enough to package it. And the price they've gone up, I think it's around 14%. This increase turnover is primarily because they're getting the bums on the actual seats. When you consider also that, you know, the increasing fuel costs and everything else, I think it really is quite a remarkable business story. But one we've come to expect from that company, I suppose, to some extent. I don't want to sound like I'm praising them too much, but I think, you know, that kind of success in this kind of environment needs to be celebrated, I think.
Well, the fares went up 14%. The average across the industry last year was 40%. So anyone looking at their Lanzarote flights in Christmas will have seen exactly what happened with fares. They're flying up. The fuel situation is also very remarkable. Michael O'Leary, as you know, is not unknown to have his elbow on the fence at race course tracks around it. He's a bit of a gambler, but he gambled very heavily on fuel going up. So he hedged 80% of his fuel for last year at a lower cost. And he's hedged 60% of this year's at whatever price he could buy. When you do that, you're gambling that the price would go up, not down. As everyone knows listening, price spiked in fuel the first 6 months immediately after the war broke out this time last year, and Ryanair ended up paying an awful lot less than the likes of Flybe, who couldn't hedge because they were a new airline and didn't have the buying power that they did.
Yeah. And finally, Ryanair offering hope to some of the Flybe staff. I think they've around about 250 staff pilots. Obviously, they'll have no issue there in getting work
in
if they wanted.
Belfast was their biggest base. It's like 150, nearly 200 people right. In Belfast. It's a shocking employment story as well.
So it's not quite as... It might require a relocation for Flybe staff to avail of any Ryanair offers then.
Well, Ryanair have put in rescue flights for the passengers, and they're having a recruitment day, I think, tomorrow for Flybe staff.
So, Ryanair do fly out of Belfast. I get confused here because there was some squabble over airports, but Ryanair do fly out of one particular Belfast airport, isn't it? Belfast City Airport, isn't it?
It's Belfast International. Aer Lingus fly out of Belfast City. But you're right, okay.
I was half right somewhere or other. That's why I've sat and I've, Owen, you know what I mean? Just to point me, yeah.
Greg, you're not the only one who needs it, because Ryanair went into Belfast International, pulled out, big row. Michael O'Leary famously called at Loch Ness International Airport. He heaped abuse and vitriol on top of Belfast International. Then, after about a year and a half, he'd arrived at Belfast City and went back to Belfast International. But he's flying out of Belfast International. Aer Lingus are flying out of Belfast City. That's how it stands. Yeah. And EasyJet, the only airport in Ireland where Ryanair go head-to-head with EasyJet is Belfast International. So it will be an interesting summer, and it could lead to very good fares out of Belfast International because Ryanair don't have the same level of competition in other airports.
And part of the problem with me too is I'm just not in airports as as often as I would like. Oh, and listen, it's always
Leave Carrick Finn, Greg. why would you ever want to leave Carrick Finn?
Yes, but I don't fly. I just sit watching airplanes. Listen, thanks very much, Owen. That's Owen Corrie there, editor of the Air and Travel magazine. Okay, back with more soon. Now, you may have heard on the news, 8.95 million. Is to be invested in 8 projects in Killybegs. The funding has been announced today by Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue under the Fishery, Harbour and Coastal Infrastructure Development Programme. Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle in Killybegs, of course, joins us now. Good morning, Thomas.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good, good. Good news?
Yeah, well, I mean, initially you would think it was good news, and I would love to be on here today saying that it's fantastic news. It's great to see this money being invested. But I have serious questions about it, because if you go back to 2017, $6.2 million was announced for Killybeg Smooth Point project. And then in 2021, $5.5 million was announced for it. And then in July last year, we had the $10.5 million project. And now we have another project again. So I would wonder what's going on here. I mean, it seems to me that this has been announced and announced and announced. And the project is trundling along slowly but surely. And I think really what should be announced is probably that this $900,000 has been allocated to this year out of an overall budget of $10.5 million. But that doesn't sound as good when you put it on the radio.
Right. So you're saying at least part of this $8.95 million has, in fact, you seem to be saying the majority of it, has already been announced over previous years.
Over a number of years, yeah, a long number of years, going back to 2017. I have found that that's just on a quick Google search. I'm sure if you looked a bit longer and a bit closer, you'd find it again as well. And in fact, I had a press release out in July last year questioning that this has been announced again at that time. And actually, the fund has decreased from July to this year. So there must be budgetary savings in relation to that as well.
Well, maybe the Green Party influence is rubbing off with the recycling.
Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe, I don't know, Pinocchio's rubbing off on...
But be that as it may, though, the work is ongoing nonetheless, though, and the money is being there to allow it to continue. So that has to be welcome. I think there's always a bit of politics played, isn't there?
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, surely that could have been announced in 2017. Or 2018 or 2019 or 2020 or 2021, and it was announced in July last year in 2022. You know, so why is it announced again? And maybe we should announce it next month as well. That would make it very positive then, and everybody would
make a bank holiday out of it, maybe every year.
Well, exactly. That would be a good start, although the business people mightn't be too happy with that. But
no, of course not.
I mean, a little bit flippant, Greg, I suppose, but, you know, the sad thing about it is that I would love to be able to be on here and saying that this is new money and this is something that's badly wanted, but this is something that's ongoing, like. And, you know, like the small craft harbour, there's funding allocated for that, which is also announced in 2021. And it's actually under construction at the moment, and it's up to the roof, like, you know, so what's the point?
We'll inquire just as to how much of this is new investment and how much of it maybe has already been spent, because I think it's important to clarification. But I mean, it's good to hear the announcements, it's good to hear work going on, but at the same time, if this is old money being re-announced, I don't think that's very good for people either, because we want to know exactly what's going on.
And actually, Greg, if it's not old money and if it's new money, then you'll have to wonder
where's the money going?
Killybegs, it's costing 6.2, 5.6, 11, 12 million, 10.5, it's 22 million, and another 9 million. So the pay extension is costing 32 million so far.
Yeah,
you have to raise questions. How it's costing that much?
Yeah, so it's important to get clarification on that. Before I let you go, maybe you didn't get the papers yesterday. Have you been tracking this story over the government's handling of the illegal care home fees? I think it's going to, if it doesn't, it possibly should dominate conversation in the Dáil over the coming days. If this is as it appears, I think it's one of the biggest health stories to come out in an incredibly long time.
It's an absolute scandal. I haven't read the full detail of it yet, but I mean, it's shocking what you actually see in relation to it. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me. Like, and that's sad to say that, but that's the way that government proceeds and the government goes on. That's what's wrong with what we have in government in this country. As basically, like, whether it's Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, they just trundle on and do the same things. And we need to change that. And ultimately, it's only the people that can change that. We'll have and lashing his teeth and up there and they'll be apologising and stuff like that. But this goes on and we know it'll go on. And I think that the Irish people deserve far better than that.
Okay, as I say, much more will come out in that story, I'm sure, in the media and in the Dáil over the coming days. Thank you very much for your time, Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle. And as I say, maybe I was being a little bit facetious there in relation to the announcements, but we shall find out, because as I say, either it's an incredibly expensive project or there is old money being announced again. I want to give a mention to something that's really caught with you out there. It's our community hero competition that's running at the moment in association with iMotors. It's a collaboration between Highland Radio and iMotors. And what we are offering here is it's a 231 Nissan Qashqai for 12 months. The Community Hero Award will honour a neighbour, family, friend, colleague or community supporter who has made an extraordinary contribution within the community. So what we're asking you to do as a individual or as an organisation, and I think all, and we were saying this during the launch at the end of last week, I think all of us can almost immediately think of someone to say, you know what, if they had a brand new car under them for 12 months, it'd be a great boost to them. People have to be over 18, of course, and hold a full driving licence and would be responsible for tax and insurance and fuel in the vehicle. But they would have access to an incredibly reliable, of course, 231 Nissan Qashqai for 12 months. So I'll give you some suggestions, but you will know yourself who would qualify for this type of a prize. We want someone who's going beyond the call of duty, that helps the community, that's caring in the community, volunteers in the community, works with young people, old people, disadvantaged people, and it costs nothing to nominate them. So tell us briefly why you believe a person that you know deserves to have access to this brand new vehicle for 12 months. And it's simple. You send in your nominations via email to comments@highlandradio.com. Email comments@highlandradio.com. But we recognise that emailing is not for everyone. So feel free to write down a few lines, stick it in an envelope and post it or drop it in to Highland Radio, Mountaintop, Letterkenny. Now, the closing date for entries is the 22nd of February. We want to work quickly on this, of course, to give them the benefit of the car all year and for the start of next year. The closing date for entries is the 22nd of February. The winner will be announced on this programme, the 9 till noon show, on the 24th of February. So nominate your community hero and they can have access for a year to a brand new 231 Nissan Qashqai for 12 months. It's a beautiful car. And I think we've already had a really good interest in that, which is great. And also, there's another thing I want to mention here, just while I have a tiny little bit of space, because the entries close on this tomorrow. Right. So, you know, here at Highland Radio, we love and support Irish music. And as part of Irish Music Month on independent radio right across the country, we are inviting you to take part, because we're taking part really as well, in our local hero talent search. So if you're a band or in a band or not in a band, whatever, individuals, and you're releasing your own original music, and it could be any genre at all, you don't need me to go through the genres, you know all about that. We want you to get involved in this competition because you'd be representing us in the county as well, I suppose you could put it like that. Also, you'll be on this show performing live, which we're really looking forward to. All the shortlisted entries will be on this show. And if you're successful, then you'll play at a national broadcasting event and win a prize pot of €10,000. So we're looking for four acts to feature on air on this show. And one of those acts then will go on to represent Highland Radio and the county in the region on a nationally broadcast gig. If you're one of the four Highland Radio shortlisted finalists, you'll receive €875, €650 for a band and €225 for the crew. Irish Music Month's promoting Irish artists from every genre from every county in Ireland. So don't miss out on your chance. Enter now. Check out our website and social media for more information. You need to do it today, though. So if moms, dads, aunts and uncles, you've got a talented band or group or individual in your family, doesn't matter what kind of music they produce, please get them to send in an MP3 to music@highlandradio.com. We bio about the band or individual and an MP3 of the song. And closing date for entries is tomorrow. So close of business tomorrow, should we put it? So if you know someone that could qualify for that, please get them to enter if they're not listening themselves. And I know from this show, and this show is just one of the many shows that supports Irish music, but particularly with them coming in live, we have just such an amazing talent of all ages as well, though. I think when people talk about Irish music, there's this focus on new. Well, we had an artist in here recently from Derry who is producing music and has started producing music really quite recently, and they're no spring chicken. I think that's not a wrong way of putting it. So don't think that, oh well, I'm not old, young enough to enter. I really don't want anyone to be discouraged by age. Not that it's laid out like that, but anyway. Right, okay. Today marks the 51st anniversary of Bloody Sunday when British soldiers shot 26 unarmed civilians. 14 people died following a protest in the Bogside area of Derry on what is regarded as one of the darkest days of the Troubles. Michael McKinney's brother, William, was killed on Bloody Sunday. Michael, I presume it's a difficult time of the year every year, and it's not just this one day or the days leading up to it. There's other Christmas time, birthdays, you know, missed opportunities to have your brother at certain events. It must be always ongoing, Michael.
Oh, absolutely, and it always has been. That loss is still there. I'm sure everyone in the family surely feel like that. We've always missed them.
The Bloody Sunday families now have been nominated to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. SDLP leader Colm Eastwood said he put them forward to honour the families and hope to pressure the British government on its planned approach to legacies. He says it's a fitting tribute for the families' long fight for truth and justice. And I suppose we all watch on in admiration, Michael, with what you're doing, what you're trying to do, what you have achieved, what you're hoping to achieve. But I suppose as a family and as a collection of families, really, you know, maybe you don't always realise that we're so focused on what you guys are doing and follow it so closely.
Well, you're right. When we started the campaign in 92, we were really fixed on what we wanted to achieve. We weren't exactly sure where we were going, but there was a determination there among us that we were never just going to give up. And look at what we've done. You know, we got the first time ever, I think we made legal history in getting this. It was the first time ever a second inquiry was ever granted in the NA event. But when you're involved in something like this, you're so focused on where you want to go and what you want to try and get done, because you know what's right. What you know what you're doing is right. You really, really, really don't realise that how much attention is on you. You know, from the public.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, the dignity of the families have been really something else.
Mm.
You know, they've really kept them to, they've kept their heads up and with dignity. I think what we've achieved, that has really been something.
I think everyone listening would agree, Michael. Is this all-consuming for you, Michael, or do you have to sort of have some of your time for the campaigning and the search for justice and then, you know, some of the time where you can try and just sort of maybe function a little bit outside of this, or maybe you don't want to? How do you strike a balance there for yourself, Michael?
Well, during the inquiry, things were a lot more intense. Mm. Things have eased off a bit now, although we have been in court as one of the five families for what happened in Grafana Park just last week and this week and probably week after. And the legal process from the prosecution thing has started. That's been ongoing now this last number of years. And, you know, it's always there. It's just, it's gone on and on. And he asked me, was it consuming? It was consuming at one stage. Not as much at the minute.
Yeah.
But it's still there. Okay. You know, you're talking about the legal process, you're talking about a massive group of families, you know, sometimes, and there are different views.
Mm.
And it's always there.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Michael. I was just always interested in that because it's such a well-organised campaign. Okay, Michael, listen, thanks for your time and my condolences to you again. This is not just the anniversary of Bloody Sunday. It's a personal thing to you, even though that is, but I hope you understand what I'm saying. Lost your brother. Okay, Michael, thank you very much indeed. Sorry. Michael McKinney, whose brother William was murdered there on Bloody Sunday.